That is why I hope our discussion here this morning, even if it is through the help of modern technology, will be a beginning of a dialogue. I will be willing to meet with many of you on my further journeys and visits to the United States and elsewhere. I would be happy to welcome many of you to Iceland, where you can take a look at what I have been talking about and engage in discussions with our scientists and policymakers. And I can promise you one thing, that I will do everything that I can to help to bring this new global coalition together. Because without it, we will not succeed. And with those words, I thank you for the opportunity to address you here today, and I'm willing to answer any of your questions.
Thank you, Mr. President. We are grateful for the time you took to give us that excellent presentation. You spoke from the heart. It was full of passion, full of sincerity, commitment to better these environments and soil resources. You certainly lead the way amongst the world leaders. We need more visionary leaders like yourself who understand the value of restoring the natural resources and caring the environment. We also appreciate your presence online this morning. I understand the President is available for questions. And ladies and gentlemen, once again, join me in welcoming the President of Iceland, Dr. Ólafur Grímsson, who is live online at this moment. Let's give him an applause. We have two mics. Please come forward, ask questions. President Grímsson can hear you and he'll reply directly. Give your name and affiliation. Yes, sir.
Stuart Pettigrove, University of California, Davis. President Grímsson, apparently in Iceland, the scientists are listened to. For those of us in other countries, do you have any tips?
Well, if you talk to many of our scientists over the years, I'm sure you would hear from them some complaints that they had not been listened to enough. And certainly some decades ago, those who were leading our soil science agency and our preservation agencies for the forests and the land often complained that they needed a more receptive audience, both from the farmers community and the political leadership. But to some extent, it is perhaps correct that we have been fortunate in this country to create a linkage between the scientific community and the policymakers with respect to preserving national resources. That's one of the reasons, for example, why our fish stocks are being preserved where they are being destroyed in many other parts. Of course, it's difficult for me to offer tips to my friends in the United States, but I have to tell you, although I can understand some of the frustrations you feel from time to time in the U.S., one of the things that impressed me about America is how both the leaders in Congress and different administrations and policymakers in individual states and cities in the U.S. have been willing to listen to scientists and experts in many different areas. But then the scientific community has to acknowledge that its responsibility is not just to create new knowledge and continue the research, but also to engage in the democratic dialogue. I know some scientists say our job is simply to work in the laboratories and in the research field, and we leave the policy making to others. But I strongly believe that scientists are not just scholars and experts, they're also citizens. And it's important, and now more than ever, that they also give emphasis to their democratic responsibilities. And whatever you say about the U.S. political system, it is still a very strong and vibrant democracy where people are able to make their voices heard.
Thank you, Mr. President. Next question, please.
Vernon Cardwell, University of Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. President, for your enlightening and exciting discussion. But it sort of raises the question, why is it that Iceland has so enlightened political leadership and the rest of the world, including the United States, finds it very difficult to develop the political will? And what is it that we could do that generates the political will, that provides the resources, that allows the scientific endeavors to provide solutions to these crucial problems? What is it that we need to do to really answer the clarion call that you have presented us with?
Well, if there was a magic formula, I would be very willing to spread it around throughout the American continent. But as I said before, although I understand the frustrations that some of you feel within the U.S., I still believe, and I have for over 20 years had extensive cooperation and dialogue with many political leaders in the U.S., both from different administrations, representatives of Washington, as well as members of Congress, and both in the Senate and the House, and various governors. I still believe that within the U.S. There is a strong body of political leaders willing to listen to scientific evidence. And when I appeared, for example, in front of the Senate Energy Committee a few weeks ago in Washington in a hearing devoted to clean energy, especially geothermal energy, I witnessed a very strong desire on behalf of that committee of the Senate to base the clean energy policy of the Senate on scientific evidence and research conclusions. And in a way, if you look at what Al Gore has achieved, as I said to him a few months ago and said after he received the Nobel Peace Prize, his success internationally in the last few years is a strong demonstration that even out of office, you can have an enormous political impact and perhaps be more influential as a private citizen than you were when you were the Vice President of the United States, because of the linkage between scientific evidence and research and political advocacy and the policy formulation. So my advice would be active in creating the political will, and don't give up. Try to support those who are willing to create these linkages, because as I said in my speech, without the coalition between the scientific community, the different political bodies, the business community, and the civic associations, we will not be able to transform the global situation.
Thank you, sir. Next question, please.
I'm Bruce James from the University of Maryland. President Grimson, would you be willing to speak to us a bit about the efforts of Iceland with regard to going toward a hydrogen economy and the use of fuel cells for transport and generation of electricity?
Well, 7 or 8 years ago, what was then Mercedes-Benz and later became Daimler-Chrysler, and Shell International and the Norwegian energy company Norsk Hydro came to us in Iceland with the proposition that we would open Iceland up to being an experimental ground, almost a kind of a national laboratory with respect to the development of a hydrogen-based traffic system. And in the first discussions that we had here 7 years ago, I asked the people from Shell the question, why are you, as an oil company, interested in this? And I have often quoted their answer because, to me, it opened up my eyes that perhaps there was different thinking in the business community than I had expected. And their answer was this. We still want to be in business in 100 years' time, when the oil has more or less disappeared as a major energy resource. So we created this joint project, and I have to tell you that the progress in the last 7 years has been much more productive and quicker than I expected. We opened up 4 years ago the first hydrogen public fuel station in the world, where cars can drive up and get hydrogen as you can do in a normal gas station. We tested out for 3 years buses in the Reykjavik traffic system, and they worked extraordinarily well. We are now in the process of testing out private cars. I myself last year drove the first private hydrogen car that was brought to Iceland, and afterwards I was told, maybe I shouldn't publicize this, that I was the first person to break and exceed the legal speed limit on a hydrogen car in my country. So now we are going to take it to the next stage of looking at the fishing fleet and the shipping. But I have to admit that in the last year or two, we have had various presentations saying that the cost of creating the hydrogen might be a prohibiting factor with respect to doing this in a big way. And then perhaps a combination of electric cars with some biofuel, especially biofuel produced from sugar cranes, might be a quicker way to enable us to have a completely non-fuel-based traffic system, fossil fuel-based traffic system in our countries. And I have seen some evidence that if we made an agreement with an African country to, for example, to grow sugar cane on 13,000 hectares, that would be enough combined with the electric cars available to enable us in Iceland to get rid of fossil fuel as a base for our entire car fleet. So we are now in the process of looking at various other options, although we will continue the hydrogen project. And we are very proud to be a part of the International Hydrogen Cooperation, where the United States, Japan, Britain, France, India, and other countries are also members. I believe Iceland is the only small or medium-sized country participating in that cooperation. And it's one more example of Iceland being willing to offer itself as a testing ground, as a laboratory, as a model for solutions that can be applicable both globally and in some other parts of the world.
Thank you, sir.
Seth Sherry, Oregon State University. President Grimson, when changes to occur, people need incentive structures, and it seems like in the common people, there's a lack of incentive on occasion, even based with scientific evidence. And I'm curious what type of incentive structure was in place for people and businesses in Iceland for them to be willing to make this change to renewable resources.
Well, it's a very interesting question because somehow you assume, like most others, that the human being is only motivated by something from which they benefit. I just listened on the news today that an international poll was taken in many different countries, which shows that over 80% of those who replied would be willing to pay more for various solutions of their daily life if it helped to prevent climate change. So it indicated that the visions, the ideals, the aspirations of people are also important, not just financial incentive or some other narrow incentive in that sense. So when it comes to our business community, they are not only inspired by what you would call good business, and certainly the clean energy is becoming a good business. They have also been inspired by Iceland making a contribution to the rest of the world, which is good for our reputation, is good for our own self-image, and also is inspirational for the younger generation in our country, because in order to survive as a nation, we need also to do something which inspires individuals, gives them ideals and hopes and self-respect. And in that sense, the clean energy development has been a combination of a good business, profitable business, and also a national aspiration, which makes us very proud. Similarly, thousands and thousands of Icelanders have been involved in land preservation schemes, planting trees, planting seeds into the ground, civic associations based in different regions of the country and in different companies, employers associations, trade unions, have had the various plots of lands allocated to them, where the members voluntarily have participated in these efforts of land reclamation or land preservation or planting trees and other such measures. So my conclusion from the national experience of Iceland, that of course business incentives are important, profit making is essential, and economic future plays a role in this overall picture, but definitely also ideals, visions, voluntary participation, self-respect, civic duties are an important element, and that's why I was quite pleased to hear of this international survey earlier today, which shows that over 80% of the people were willing to do more in order to prevent climate change, even if it was at greater cost.
Thank you, Mr. President. We have at least three other persons standing here. I hope you have time to answer three more questions. Ray, please.
I'm Ray Weil from the University of Maryland, and I just wanted to ask what your experience was in terms of leading by example, which is what Iceland, of course, as a country is trying to do. And you're not in this room. I wish you could have made it here. If you were here, you would notice there are a lot of, I had to don my hat, and there are a lot of people that are hugging themselves to try to keep warm. We are, of course, in New Orleans. It's quite warm outside, and we're in an over-air-conditioned auditorium. I believe you have to really bring winter clothes, as any foreigner knows. When you come to visit the U.S. in the hot season, you better bring some warm clothes. So I'm wondering if an institution like the Soil Science Society of America, and I happen to serve on the locations committee where we choose where the next meetings will be. Never did it come up. We talked about the hotel prices and this and that and the other, but never did it come up whether or not the convention center and the facilities were energy efficient or green or setting the kind of example that we want. And I don't see why we as an institution can't work with them to set the temperature. At least, a pretty simple thing, request that when we're here, at least, we would like the temperature set at a reasonable rate, and maybe even at our food events, that our food be raised in a green way.
Well, it's a very good point. It reminds me of what my wife often says, which is the following advice. Whenever you go to the United States, and wherever you're going in the United States, always bring your winter clothes, because it's always winter inside any building you're where you stay because of the air conditioning. But first of all, let me say that unfortunately my duties here prevented me from being with you in person. I had planned to do so, but as you might realize, people in my position are sometimes not completely free with respect to our times and so on, and ultimately my duties are to the people of Iceland, and I have to respect that. So that's why I wasn't able to make the journey. But I hope that what we have done here today, both my presentation and our discussion, will lead to active cooperation, as I indicated in my opening lecture, I am more than willing, I am in fact eager to create an active dialogue and cooperation with your association and individual members, because first of all, I learn a lot from it, and I believe that such associations can be very strong instruments, not just with respect to policies and public opinion in the United States, but also internationally, as well as being tools through which one can further the spread of knowledge and the scientific conclusions. And that is why I have also sent a representative from my office, a young economic scholar who has been working with me on this issue, to be with you there. And I hope he is in the audience today, and perhaps later you could facilitate that he could meet with some of you to make this contact easier. So I really want to emphasize my desire to use both my trips to the United States to meet with you or the board or some of your colleagues in different universities, as well as welcoming some of you here in Iceland. I think visits to Iceland could be both inspirational and very educational. Your point about leading by example is, of course, very important. And I will give you two examples from my recent journeys. I made a state visit to Romania a few weeks ago, and as you might know, the infamous president of Romania, Ceausescu, was ultimately assassinated by his people in the revolution, a great tyrant and authoritarian leader, built a large building. Some people maintain it's the largest building in the world to glorify his power. And it required 10% of the entire energy production of the capital city of Romania. And it now is the home of the parliament, and the speaker of the parliament decided to change the light bulbs in the entire building. And through that, he saved 60% of the electricity in that building, which is the 60% of the 10% of that produced by the entire capital. And secondly, I opened up a new type of office building a few weeks ago, which was built by an Icelandic company in Great Britain with the purpose of demonstrating that a modern office building could use far less electricity if it was done in an environmentally different way. And they succeeded in doing that based on 5 years of research. And this new office building, which is competitive with respect to other buildings, uses only 20% of the electricity or the energy that a normal office building uses. So I just give you these two examples, which both demonstrate in a clear way that through changing the way we behave, whether we are individuals or homes or companies or corporations or universities or conference halls, we can have an enormous impact on the changing the situation. And that is why it is partly a campaign to motivate people and to mobilize them to do things differently. And there, scientists and researchers and such associations can have a very strong impact. So I hope when you hold your next convention, you will create a list of conditions that you put to those who are going to host it.
Thank you, sir. We'll take one last question, please, lady.
My name is Amy Roebuck. I'm an undergraduate student at University of Wisconsin, River Falls, and there's a lot of students here today listening to your talk. And can you give us any advice of how we can start impacting the future? Because as you mentioned before, students are the future of climate change and of global warming. So is there any advice that you can give us?
Well, one of the things I have found interesting in the last 2 or 3 years, when I have given lectures on this issue, climate change, energy, and the related issues, whether it is in China or whether it's in the United States or Europe or elsewhere, the reaction of the students, and I've done this in a number of universities, is more or less the same. So I believe that there is now a global community of students and young people concerned and interested and already mobilized on this issue. And they can have a tremendous impact. And I believe are already having it. In my visit to China last month, I observed that in many different parts of China, how the views of the young generation in China are having a strong impact on this. And within the United States, of course, the young people can, within the political process, have a very big role, because on this issue, you can speak perhaps with greater authority than the rest of us, because it's ultimately your future. It's your future. The only debate which is left about climate change is whether we have 10 or 15 years or 25 to 35 years to change this. Whatever the answer is, whether it's 10 or 15 years or 25 to 35 years, it will be at the height of your professional career. It will be the time when you have your families and you're bringing up your children. So it fundamentally is your future. So you can make a stronger political case against the leadership of countries and of businesses and corporations, of cities and states, than anybody else, because it is the prospect of not only your security, but also your happiness and those of your children that is at stake here. And if the students put it in those terms, as well as harnessing the knowledge and the expertise which they have acquired, they can be a tremendously strong force in this. And if you look at the kind of people who have made Al Gore a global influence on this issue, and in my opinion, a stronger political leader today than he ever was when he was Vice President of the United States. And it's an interesting, positive sign of how the global political model has been completely transformed, that Al Gore can be more powerful out of office than when he was in office. That similarly, it were primarily the younger generation that gave him that strength through listening to his message, going to his movie, and speaking about it on the internet and making it a big international movement. It was not my generation that made Al Gore's message a big international movement. It's primarily the young generation. So it has already been proved that it's possible through the internet to transform the global situation in this way. And if this is the final question, then let me again thank you for the privilege of inviting me to speak to you, to apologize again for not being able to be there in person. But I can assure you that I will do everything in my power to create opportunities in the coming months and the next few years, so we could continue this dialogue and perhaps develop modes of active cooperation on this issue, not just with respect to the United States, but also with respect to different parts of the world. And as I said before, Mr. Dagfinn Sveinbjörnsson, who is there as my representative, is available for further contacts and other ideas, and I hope you make the most of his presence there.
Mr. President, on behalf of the Soil Society of America, we thank you for your visionary lecture, your great leadership and visionary role that you are playing on world arena. We wish you all a success in your very noble cause, and I request invite my members of the Soil Society of America joining me in wishing you success in this endeavor and in thanking you tremendously for being with us this morning, answering questions, and giving an outstanding lecture. Please join me in thanking President Grimson.
Well, thank you very much indeed. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir, and have a very nice day. Thank you for coming.